And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Godin on this Wednesday, October 6th. And as usual, I am joined by Arpin Basu. Hello, my friend. How are you today?
I'm good. 1 week away from the start of the regular season. We're starting to see some clarity here and we can start talking about an NHL team instead of what we've seen to this point, which has been just a mishmash of AHL guys and junior guys and all sorts of people. Canadians finally started to show some clarity as to what they're going to look like this season.
I can already tell from the sound of your voice all that excitement. Listen, today the Canadians at practice displayed what looked like for the first time their full squad and what could somewhat look like their NHL roster. But before we dive into this, let me ask you this, all right? On how bad of a training camp is this on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being there's, you know what, there's no problem at all, to 10 major code red for the upcoming season?
Oh, well, I don't want to be an alarmist, so I'm not going to say 10 because, you know, I mean, there's still Nick Suzuki's healthy, Cole Caulfield's healthy, Brendan Gallagher's healthy. A lot of their key players are healthy, but, you know, insofar as I'm going to go with a 7.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 7. Just because, obviously, you know, Dominique Ducharme announcing today that Carey Price will not only not start the regular season, but is not even slated to practice with the team before the start in the next week or so. So this illness is obviously...
That's quite an illness.
Well, I think the illness coupled with them wanting him to ramp up at a certain pace, you know, I think that's really, I don't think they anticipate him being sick for the next week, but I do think the fact that he's been off the ice for a few days because of the illness has thrown their whole plan off kilter with him. So you know, he won't be practicing with the team before the start of the regular season, which means his arrival or his integration onto the team will take some time, you know, probably not until at some point over the homestand that follows their opening two games between in Toronto and in Buffalo on back-to-back nights, which, you know, we should actually see Samuel Montembeau start the game in Buffalo, I would imagine, I'm going to guess. But yeah, I think, you know, that's not ideal. So that's a contributing factor to the 7 score I gave. And obviously Joel Edmondson, you know, which started as a minor injury, shouldn't take too long, should be back in a couple of days, is now going to be missing for 2 to 3 weeks from today.
Yeah.
So that escalated quickly. And, that's a big one for me.
That's worse. Yeah. That's worse than Carey Price, because Carey Price, you know, that Jake Allen is there who can do a perfectly fine job in backing him up and, you know, and taking the load if need be. And there's been various points in time the need was there. And you know, he can do the job, but damn, the Canadians in the blue line have been so that training camp has shown how awfully thin they are on the back end, and just not having Edmondson in there. They're, you know, a member of the most stable D pairing last season with Jeff Petrie. It forces the Canadians to, you know, to go for their depth. And even then, I mean, some of the guys that they were taking a look at, namely Sami Niku and Matthias Norlander, are out with injuries themselves. So it's going to be down to Chris Weidman and Brett Kulak to pick up the slack. And it's you quickly come to the end of the NHL caliber resources that the team has right now. So it's even more problematic.
Yeah, it is a big issue. And, you know, I think that the fact that Edmondson and Petrie were the one returning pair was something that the Canadians were going to bank on to start the season. You know, you look at the way the defense was configured at practice on Wednesday, and listen, Dominique Ducharme did not commit to using this as his starting setup on defense. You know, it's just he wanted Sherratt and Savard to get some looks, to get some reps together in the game on Thursday against the Senators, because for various reasons that they might spend some time on the penalty kill together or situational play where they might wind up together, but he wouldn't commit to actually using that pairing once the regular season starts as a standard pairing. But still, the way it was set up, you have Romanov with Petrie, who Romanov's been with Petrie since day one of training camp, essentially. Not necessarily in all the games, but has played with him in practice for the most part. And you know, Ducharme mentioned that Romanov's best games have come with Petrie on his right, so that's part of the logic there.
Yeah.
You go with Sherratt Savard, which, as I just mentioned, Ducharme is not committing to, and then you go Kulak Weidman. And really, you go back to, at various points in training camp when Ducharme has emphasized how he does not want a top four, he wants a top six, he wants each of his pairings to be able to face anyone else. And clearly, the way that D was set up at practice on Wednesday and how we're going to see it in the game on Thursday, that's not the case. I don't think you can trot out Brett Kulak and Chris Weidman against Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and hope to survive that. That's not a realistic thing. So we'll see how the D actually winds up looking. I'm not convinced that this is actually the way he's going to go, but for now, this really underscores, you know, what the loss of Edmondson does to this defense, and really, from a bigger picture standpoint, underscores what will happen if any of their top defensemen get injured at any point. This is what will happen, because it's not realistic to think that their defense is going to go through the entire season healthy. So really what we're getting a glimpse of is what will happen when the inevitable does happen, which is one of their top defensemen gets injured. And because Shea Weber's no longer there, they do not have the depth to allow them to, that's going to allow them to withstand any significant injury for any extended period of time.
Well, what's interesting also is that the fact that, you know, Weber not being there anymore and Edmondson being out, what had become during the playoffs the true identity of this team defensively, being, you know, hard to play against, being big and mean, the result had been, you know, so during the regular season, but it proved very effective during the playoffs. But that identity now, you'll have to look for it, and somehow I guess I don't know to which extent David Savard is really going to be the type of defenseman that's going to embrace that and be part of that that continuum. But it's I'm looking forward, and I'm curious to see if this is going to hold, if that definition of what the D-Core was last year is going to remain the same, especially with Weber not being in the picture anymore. Because, you know, it could hold for just 1 year. And we know that Ben Sherratt's in the last year of his contract. He's entering the last year of his contract. But it's you have that the Canadians have admittedly said that they were in need of a puck moving defenseman, preferably a righty that could that was able to play effectively on the power play. They've been looking to mix it up a little bit and change the formula. But right now it looks as though, of course, it's preseason, and I understand that we cannot draw too many conclusions out of that. But when you look at the amount of shots that the Canadians are giving, the amount of chances that they're giving in their own end, it's not exactly that tight defense that they had shown late in the season last year. And it's going to be paramount for them that they recapture some of it if they want their season to go in the right direction.
Yeah. And so, you know, well, just getting back to the original question of the seven, you know, the 1 to 10 and seven. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are other factors there that we haven't mentioned. You know, obviously Mike Hoffman being injured before he even got to Montreal in a workout at home. So not being available has also had some sort of incidents on the forward group. And I think we'll get back to the forward group in a second here, the way they were lined up at practice and what we can kind of interpret from that. But you know, Ryan Poehling not having the best camp, you know, becoming a daily topic of conversation, and I think being overanalyzed to a certain extent. You know, he hasn't been great. I don't think he's been awful, but you know, obviously they would have liked to see Ryan Poehling come in and make that a non-issue, like for him to perform in such a way that he provided an answer for them that he hasn't provided yet, and so those two factors as well create sort of a less than ideal training camp so far, a far less than ideal.
Yeah. And the, you look also around the, just the depth of the fourth line as a whole, you know, now the Canadians cut a few players again on Wednesday. So now they're down to three guys, namely, Poehling, Alex Belzile, and Cédric Paquette, who will be fighting for two spots between the three of them. You know, it's still expected at this point that Cédric Paquette is going to be able to start the season on time. He's been testing his groin. It's getting better. He's not going to be okay to play the last preseason game, but there's going to be, after that, 5 days of rest and practice that should enable him to start the season on time. And you could think that he's got, you know, he's there if the Canadians decide that it's not Ryan Poehling time in Montreal yet, and he's demoted to Laval, then that would automatically make Paquette the fourth line center. If Poehling sticks around, Paquette could become then your third 13 forward. But I was listening to Dominique Ducharme, you know, praising Alex Belzile today and how he's been fighting throughout his career, and I think that the organization has a great deal of admiration for the heart and the hard work that he's put into his career in order to get to this point now. And I think that the level of passion and urgency in his own game is something that the Canadians wish they got from everybody, from all of their players. And I wonder, you know, if just everything that he represents, everything that he's done to get to that point, is not somehow even more so than the individual performances in games is what is going or could earn him a spot as at least as a 13 forward on this squad. So it's down to three guys, but it's so weird because there's been so many injuries, guys being out, and it's not necessarily supremely deserving players that's going to get those spots. It's going to be almost like it's going to fall on their lap, basically. So this also is not ideal.
No, it's not. And you know, I mean, the situation on defense really, really that shines through. I mean, I think, listen, if a fair evaluation of Chris Weidman's training camp would be that he's shown some very nice things on the power play, has shown an ability to properly run a power play. Canadiens' power play has been, by and large, effective when he's been on the ice in the preseason games. You know, 5-on-5, it's a bit of ups and downs, I would say. I don't think it's been all bad. You know, he's shown some ability to escape forechecks to sort of, and, you know, use his mobility to his advantage in his own end. Once the puck is on his stick or once the Canadiens have possession, it's getting that possession back that's proven problematic for him. And you know, I was talking to, you know, an NHL scout during one of these preseason games, and I noted a play where Weidman actually made a really nice play to get away from a forechecker, kind of spun away from him on the end boards and took the puck to the other corner behind his own net and sort of took his time in making his decision. And next thing you knew, another forechecker was on him and took the puck away from him because he took too much time to move it. And, you know, I asked the scout about that and he was like, well, you know, I was like, is that the sign of an adjustment of someone playing in the KHL on the bigger ice? He's like, it has nothing to do with the bigger ice. It's the fact that the KHL, there's no forechecking in the KHL. It's non-existent. And that's because of the bigger ice in part, but it's also just a style of play where teams don't forecheck. Once they lose possession, they sort of sit back and wait to trap teams trying to come back up ice. So, you know, that's going to take some adjustment from him, but that's also, you know, an area of his game where you would think he would be able to adjust because, you know, he makes quick decisions on the power play in the offensive zone. He's able to make decisions in the neutral zone. So I think just in his own end, that's probably just going to be a little bit of a readjustment. But it was, you know, when you mentioned that not necessarily the best candidates are getting these jobs. I mean, Chris Weidman right now, as you mentioned, Sammy Niku gets hurt, Matthias Norlander gets hurt. There's a reason why these guys were in camp is that, you know, especially Niku, who was brought in to fight for that job that Weidman is seemingly getting by default right now, you know, barring Matthias Norlander somehow getting healthy and getting some games in, which I think is still a possibility. But Weidman really, to me, exemplifies what this training camp is like, where, you know, he's filling a need. He's not the ideal guy for that position, but because they don't have many other options, many other better options, or many other options, period, he's the guy for now. And they're gonna see how they go with him playing a semi-regular shift at 5-on-5. But I think with Edmondson not there, Dominique Ducharme's sort of utopian notion that I want three pairings who can play against anyone and all that, even if the defense is not organized the way they were at practice on Wednesday, just with the personnel he has on hand, I find it very difficult to see how he's going to be able to do that. And he's going to have to lean on the veteran guys, but also Alexander Romanov, who has not had a fantastic training camp either.
No.
To have some big responsibilities and to play heavier minutes than I think Ducharme wanted his top four on defense to play initially.
Yeah, it's the of course, nothing is set in stone, and we have yet to see if Romanov is going to start the season on the left side of Petrie. But it comes on the heels of a game on Tuesday night in Toronto where Romanov was paired with Gianni Fairbrother, and he struggled mightily. I thought that, you know, everything that the Canadians were worried about when it comes to rushing his decisions, trying to be everywhere at once, trying to, you know, having so much, having such a busy game. That's an expression that we've heard from Marc Bergevin before. They were hoping that he would calm his game down, and probably that having a steadier partner could help in that sense. But I mean, he was trying to do it all yesterday, or should I say on Tuesday in Toronto, and he ended up being on the ice for four of the Maple Leafs goals. And it's a tricky situation for Alexander Romanov, because on the one hand, he's counted upon to, you know, to improve on last season. Dominique Ducharme said he's already a better player than he was last year because of all the things that he integrated, everything that he's learned. So I think that with Shea Weber not being there, he's a borderline, you know, top 40 at this point. And if not, he's their number, highly ranked number five, if such a thing exists. But at the same time, he's still only a second year, not a second year pro, but second year player in the NHL. And you don't want this guy to become like just the new easy target, the new guy that's going to be pointed on, because you know how it is in Montreal. You know, we look at the young players and we're so quick to point fingers at them and say that they're not developed the way they should, or they're not delivering on the promises that we heard about them. So I just hope that Alexander Romanov is not going to turn into this year's whipping boy, and part of that responsibility, I guess, comes from the team itself and the way that they're letting him grow at his own pace and let him do mistakes, and they're not going to have a quick hook every time that he makes a mistake. So, you know, considering their depth right now, I don't know if they have the luxury of doing that, because they don't have much of alternatives right now. If they say, well, let's bench him for, let's scratch him for a game or two. I'm not sure if they've got any alternatives, but once Edmondson is healthy, there might be more options along the way. But I really hope that they give him time to really find his groove again, find his confidence again. But it's just surprising to me that that first chance looks like it's going to be with Jeff Petrie, who's another dynamic, smooth skating player, and not necessarily a more stay-at-home defenseman who could, like a David Savard, for example.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think let's wait and see. I mean, we're going to see that pairing on Thursday in the final preseason game. We'll see how it develops, I guess. I personally think we're going to see that pairing on opening night. I don't know if we'll see the Sherratt-Savard pairing on opening night. At least not as the regular pair, as I mentioned earlier. But it is, I think the Canadians are heavily invested in making sure Alexander Romanov succeeds. And they're working with him, and they want, I think this notion that grew out of his playoff non-usage last season, that the Canadians somehow had something against Alexander Romanov, is not true. I think what that was all about was that they had not gained a level of trust in his decision making and his understanding of situational play, particularly in his own end, when to go kill a play and when to sit back, what angles to take, and all the little decisions that can lead to big consequences in the playoffs. The Canadians had not felt at that point that he had grasped those well enough, but I do think that, they recognize the growth that he had in his first season, despite what happened in the playoffs, and they see that he is going to be a big part of this defense, probably this season, but definitely in the coming seasons, and they're heavily invested in that coming to fruition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'd like to talk about the forwards now, because, we did get our first look at, and actually, I don't think we did get our actual look at what the group of 12 might look like, but we do have six that I think are pretty much set in stone. So like Toffoli, Suzuki, Caulfield as one line, Drouin, Dvorak, Anderson as another line. And then it's still a little murky. So, you know, at the skate on Wednesday, you know, we had Armia, Evans, Gallagher. To me, I think that's a line. We had Lehkonen rotating with Armia on left wing on that line. I don't think that he's actually going to be on that line. Based on everything that Ducharme has said about what he would like from his forward group and what he sees in Evans, I have the strong inclination that that line is going to be not only a thing, but it's going to play an actually a very important role on this team, that they're going to see some difficult matchups and they're going to be sort of, you know, to the extent that I think you and I had kind of assumed to some extent that Dvorak was going to step into Deno's role, which he does in certain respects. I really think, you know, with the number of times Dominic Ducharme has compared Evans to Deno to some degree over the course of training camp, it's happened like four or five different times.
Yeah,
I do think he sees that line as being somewhat of a Deno light, let's say, from last year. And when you look at the qualities of the players, first of all, you have Gallagher, who was on that line. Evans, who, you know, is able to play a two-way game or at least a strong defensive game. And Armia, who is a good forechecker and is good at tracking pucks and creating turnovers, much like Tomáš Tatar was on that line. I could see that being happening. And obviously the last line is where a lot of the intrigue lies. As mentioned earlier, Ryan Poehling not seizing that job as the center of that line. Mathieu Perrault getting looks at center on that line. Paquette being in the mix and being hurt. Then you have Lehkonen, who, and I thought it was interesting, you know, today, you know, I asked Dominic Ducharme, does having Lehkonen on whatever line he's on allow you to put a guy like, let's say, Perrault or Drouin or someone who's not necessarily used to playing center and who's not necessarily great at playing as the low man in your own end, does having Lehkonen on a line with a center like that allow him to take that role in the defensive zone and have, you know, have the center play center basically in the neutral zone and the offensive zone? And he rejected that notion completely. I thought that was really interesting because he was like, no, I don't care who it is. Everyone has to be able to do that job. Everyone has to be able to kill a play when it's called for. So I don't know what to make of what's going to happen on that line, because I think there's a lot of questions that remain.
Yeah. Well, in regards to the answer to your question, I think that Ducharme wanted to make sure that everybody were taking their own responsibility and that they would not defer to a teammate saying, well, yeah, anyway, he's going to do it for me. I feel as though there was one season where Lehkonen was Max Domi's winger. And it's really where I feel that's where your question originates from, is because
yes, it is. There was absolutely.
There was this season where Lehkonen was doing all the dirty work down low, you know, defensively. And even though technically Max Domi was the centerman on that line, he was acting more like a winger. And that's how they got by defensively, by having, you know, Lehkonen taking like extra responsibilities defensively. So I think that it's an interesting approach to put the onus on every player to say, you know what, if we put you in a certain spot, it's because we think that you can do the job and it's because we expect you to do the job. So at the same time, I think it's having Lehkonen, whoever is going to be, I mean, at this point, he's the only sure thing on that fourth line. All the other guys, whether it's, you know, Perrault, Poehling, Paquette, Belzile, all these guys are...
Even Ullinen, who's still in camp.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to be admissible. I discount him because I don't think he's going to be admissible to play the first few games because of his second shot of vaccine.
So, yeah, that's true.
So I think, to me, he's still around because he's a good player. I mean, if he had figured it out earlier and had decided to get his vaccines earlier than that, he might be in the mix because I think he's skilled enough.
He would only have to miss the game in Buffalo.
Well, if he misses the first two, I know, but if he misses the first two games, they're not going to carry him on the team and risk losing a player on waivers.
He wouldn't have to miss the Toronto game. That's what I'm saying. He'd only have to miss the Buffalo game because then they have four home games after that. I'm just saying it's not his vaccination status would only prevent him from playing in Buffalo.
Yes, yes, yes. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the what was I saying with that? Yeah, so I think that Lekkonen is a good security blanket, no matter who his teammates are, because of his defensive responsibility. But I think that there's still a lot to be defined on that line. And honestly, if there's still an if there's another lukewarm performance from Paling in this in Thursday night's game, I wouldn't be entirely surprised if they went out to see what's on the waiver wire, and if they look for a more seasoned centerman that could, you know, fill the gap there, someone who could provide maybe a more effective version than Cédric Paquette, for example, who's, you know, who's always an injury risk. And of course, he's an energy forward, but let's face it, at this point in his career, he might be more of an extra forward than the top 12 forward. So we'll see.
Yeah. And, you know, like, let's be clear, like, we're talking about the fourth line. You know, I feel like Allen Iverson, every time in training camp, and oftentimes in Montreal, you know, this is the beauty of the Montreal market, is that debates over who's on the fourth line are as important as debates over who's starting in goal and who's, you know, it's everything.
Yeah, but you know what?
Important.
That's true. But, you know, it's not because we're crazy in Montreal. It's because for the longest time, this team has been a weak link built type of team. If we don't have the superstars up front, there's no Connor McDavid on that team. So you have to look, you know, how does the depth forwards and the depth defensemen compared to the depth forwards and depth defensemen of other teams? Because that's how that team operates into making sure that it's in contention.
I understand that. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that the group of players that we're talking about to fill those roles, the fact that Lekkonen, we're assuming, is going to be one of the players on that line.
Yeah.
Already, you're ahead of the game. You know, Mathieu Perrault, who's been a fourth line player more or less, or bottom six player with the Jets for a while, but is a very good bottom six player, has been over the last few years. You know, does a lot of things well. You know, he's lost a step for sure. There's no doubt. He's not a speed burner, but he's a smart player who can play a role on the power play as a net front guy, which they lost when Corey Perry signed with the Lightning. And is just a smart player who can play at the center, but he can play wing just as easily and just is effective at what he does. So if you use those two guys as sort of a starting point, and then whether it's Paling in the middle, whether it's Paquette in the middle, they're obviously different players, and I agree, Paquette is what he is, you know. So if you're going with Paquette, then you have to live with his limitations, because they're not changing anytime soon, which is why I think they're, even if Paling doesn't produce a wow game in his final preseason game, you know, I think they would be inclined to give him a shot in the regular season and let him play and see whether he can just get past, and see if sort of the pressure of training camp and the pressure of the situation, and knowing that he had an opportunity for his first solidified NHL job, if that had some sort of impact on the way he was playing. You know, but I think if the line winds up being, for now, you know, obviously Mike Hoffman's not there, Paul Byron's going to be back in December or maybe January at some point, but at some point, so things can change, especially when Hoffman comes back, which, you know, will probably be in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks from now. But having a Perrault, Paling, Lekkonen fourth line, if that turns out to be the case, still allows the Canadians to maintain that identity as a weak link team, because I think at least two of those guys are pretty high-end fourth-line players. And I think even Ryan Paling, you know, and if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about Ryan Paling for a second, because...
I don't. Go ahead.
It's something that I think needs to be said, because I think, you know, Ryan Paling is somewhat a victim of expectations. You know, I think people wanted to see him really grab the ball and run through the hole and take it to the end zone and really grab that job and leave no question, leave no doubt in anyone's mind that that's his job. He hasn't done that. I don't think anyone would argue that he has done that. But I also think that people are really piling on and saying that he's playing extremely badly. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. He's had some bad moments. He's made some questionable decisions in the games that he's played. But, you know, I think watching him play in the preseason, you can see what would make him an effective player. And what and like the way I look at Ryan Poehling is that he's kind of an all-around, like his ceiling is like an all-around good player. Like in the sense that he doesn't do anything spectacularly well. He's not particularly fast, but he's a decent skater. He's not a physical guy, but he has size. You know, he doesn't have that one element that pops in his game. You know, like Jesse Ullinen, for instance, when you watch him skate, that's the element of his game that pops. You know, you see him against NHL competition and you're like, wow, that's a plus skater right there. I don't think Poehling's a plus anything, but I think there's been too much emphasis on the minus in his game, like in the sense that I really don't think he's played as bad as everyone is saying he's playing. He's just not playing so well that he's leaving no doubt as to he should be on the team. You know, he's not taking an opportunity and grabbing it and forcing his way onto the team. And so I think there's some perspective to be had there. Like, I mean, it's, I think, you know, we have a tendency to do this in training camp when there's a young player who has an opportunity to make that transition to the NHL and there's all this expectation heaped on him. You know, I would say that Nick Suzuki has not had the best training camp in the world. You know, like he hasn't looked fantastic when he's played, you know, but no one's talking about that because it's a given that Nick Suzuki is going to be the first line center. And Nick Suzuki has proven that he's earned that position. So I think there's a bit of grain of salt to be taken with the way Ryan Poehling's performed. You know, yes, I'm sure the organization, I'm sure Ryan Poehling himself is probably disappointed with the way he's performed. But to go from that to say he's played awful, like, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's accurate. And so I'd be interested to see what the Canadians think of it and whether they would be interested in seeing him when he's removed from this training camp environment and he's given a chance as a member of the team and say, okay, listen, we're going to give you this chance. Now you have to run with it. Now you got to do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's an aspect of it also is that it's the echo chamber, you know?
Yes.
People, either on social media or our colleagues or whoever on TV, whatever, all the analysts, the whole market, once we start going in a certain direction, the nuance is saying that the guy is not running with it. He's not clearly beating Cédric Paquette for a job. All of a sudden, these nuances that are to me facts become he's horrible. He's a bust. He's never going to be anything, etc. He's an AHL player. I think that and because people keep harping on and going in the same direction, it seems as though it's like all guns blazing in the same direction. It's not entirely bad. The only thing is that I see a kid who's got a great opportunity now to take an NHL job. And I would like just to see a bit more fire.
Urgency. Urgency is what you want to see. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And I've not seen urgency from him at all.
No, and sometimes, you know, and it's not even, I mean, in the offensive zone, it's been okay. It's more like his reads in the defensive zone, making sure that, you know, he's not in front of the puck, that he's aware of who's around him, which opponents are around him. But it's your point is entirely valid. If the Canadians say, you know what, we're going to show confidence in this kid, and no matter what sort, no matter how you decide to qualify his preseason, we give him a job, and let's go, kid. You're our fourth line center to start the season. It might just be what he needs, because he's got the makings of an NHL player. To me, there's no doubt there. But has he put it all together? No. But are we going again for the third year in a row? Say, okay, well, he's going to start in Laval, and he's going to build up his game again, going over the disappointment of being cut by the Canadiens. And at some point, two to three months down the road, he's going to have picked up his game. He's going to get into a rhythm and find then he's going to be worthy of a recall. If they could avoid that and have a a better version of Ryan Poehling sooner than that, and that'd be great. And maybe that it goes through just showing that simple vote of confidence, that little tap on the back. They know their players. They're meant, you know, they're supposed to know their personalities, which buttons to push. And it might just be the sort of button that needs to be pushed for Ryan Poehling.
And I think the beauty of it from the Canadiens' point of view is that they're in a position to do that. Like, as long as Hoffman's not ready, they have an empty forward slot to work with, right? And so, you know, I think, and this is another thing that I wanted to talk to you about is where does Hoffman fit in this group? So this will kind of segue to that. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's not inconceivable that, let's say the Canadiens start with Perreault, Poehling, Lehkonen on that line. And then you let it run. Well, I mean, assuming Poehling's able to actually justify staying in the lineup, but you let that run for a while. And then when Hoffman comes back, then you have to make a decision, right? Because you have the option of moving Perreault to center and going maybe Hoffman, Perreault, Lehkonen, even though everyone would freak out that Hoffman would be on a quote-unquote fourth line. But I don't think that's an impossible situation. Maybe Hoffman goes into Armia's spot on that Evans line, which personally I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. In which case, Armia has to drop down to that line. But in any case, it'll create a pressure point where a decision has to be made. So what they have the luxury of that time until Hoffman's back, they can give Poehling some games to play and prove himself without sort of the pressure of the camp environment really, really overtaking things. Because I'll tell you one thing. You know, I mentioned earlier that Nick Suzuki has not had an outstanding training camp. Not that he's been bad, but not been amazing, you know. If that's the case in the regular season, then guess what? Not a whole lot of people are going to be talking about how Ryan Poehling's playing. People are going to be talking about how Nick Suzuki's playing, or Jonathan Drouin, or Dvorak, or all the other guys higher up the lineup. If they're not performing, that's going to become the storyline. In training camp, invariably, and it makes sense, the people battling for a spot on the team are the main story. And that's what training camp is for, so that makes sense. So maybe if that spotlight is taken off of him, where, you know, once the regular season starts, he basically just becomes a fourth line forward, that would be an environment where he could maybe thrive a little and just relax and play his game and not think everything is so life and death every single time he suits up. But to segue to that, I am interested to hear what you think the Canadiens will do when Hoffman comes back in a couple of weeks, because the way the lines are configured now, where do you see Hoffman fitting in, and would his return require like wholesale changes all over the place, or do you think there's an obvious spot for him right now?
Well, okay. First off, the way this training camp has gone, it's just that sort of karma that seems to be on the Canadiens this year. It doesn't look like anybody's going to beat the medical prognosis anytime soon. It seems like everybody's scaling back a little bit. So when they say Mike Hoffman could miss up to a month, I'll assume that he'll miss a month. So I'll say 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks at this right. point, since sure. the announcement.
That's fair, yes.
And 3 weeks is an eternity in hockey, because in the first 3 weeks of the season, to think that all those top three lines are all going to work to an extent where they say, well, please don't touch a thing, I'd be very surprised if it happened. You know, right from the start, having Drouin, Dvorak, and Anderson together, to me, I raised an eyebrow a little bit. I find that it's a line that can be vulnerable defensively. But who knows? It might work. Armia, Evans, Gallagher, I'm fully on board with that. Armia and Evans, they've been a pair since the beginning of training camp. So I think that they see what they got there, and I think that they want to move ahead with that. But when you say, where does Hoffman fit in? There cannot be any connection between Hoffman place in the lineup and, let's say, Poehling be at the fourth line center, because those are really two different issues. Hoffman coming back is not going to solve the problem that the Canadiens don't have a surefire options as fourth line center, and Perreault is not going to be that option. Even if we all of a sudden, with Hoffman coming back, they'll scramble to find him a place. It might the first option that I see, and I think that the first guy that seems likely to be put on the fourth line would be Armia. But if you do Hoffman, Evans, and Gallagher, Hoffman is not the same caliber, you know, to follow.
Well, you're not giving that line difficult matchups. If you do that, line can't take on tough matchups.
Well, no. I mean, it's adding, they could, but it's definitely adding a burden on Evans and Gallagher, because yes, Hoffman is not as good a defensive player as Tomáš Tatar was. You know,
he's not as good a defensive player as just about anyone.
Well, there you go. So if he needs to be carried by his line mates, and Evans is counted upon to take some of the defensive responsibilities and the tough matchups, defensive zone face-offs and whatnot, Hoffman is really in the tough spot to be put in there. If Drouin Anderson, it seems like it's too iffy defensively, you cannot replace any of those two by Hoffman, because it's only going to make matters worse. So if you want to leave things as they are, it means Hoffman is a power play specialist and he's put on the fourth line, which he has seen before. He has seen that in Ottawa, and if memory serves well, in Florida too. I think that in St. Louis, I think that he went from the third line to the press box for a few games, but didn't see necessarily fourth line action. The Canadiens could choose to go there. But then it becomes
He could get significant minutes playing on a fourth line. Let's just make that clear. Like, he could play 12 to 14 minutes when you throw power play time in.
Yeah.
If he's playing on a fourth line, like which is legitimate as far as usage is concerned.
That, well, if you got Lehkonen on the other side, it's interesting. But again, you have to have a centerman who's going to be up to play 14 minutes a night. And I'm not sure if either Paling, Paquette, or Perreault at center.
Well, no, he'll get some of those minutes on the power play.
On the power play, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So he would play like 11 minutes with his line, and then maybe 3 minutes on the power play or something like that.
Right. And the other thing is, and I think I brought it up on the French version of our podcast, but the fact that he plays primarily on the right circle, and that Nick Suzuki is primarily a right circle guy too, makes it so that they're not going to work on the same unit. Jonathan Drouin hinted to the fact that he would become probably a combination between him and Hoffman. But if you use a power play specialist on your second unit and he's on your fourth line at even strength and you pay him $4.5 million a year, was it really the investment that the Canadiens needed to do in this offseason?
I would gamble that, depending on how the ice time was working when the penalty was taken, you know, I think all things being equal, if Dvorak is on Hoffman's unit, which seemingly he would be if Suzuki's on the other unit, I could see Dvorak's unit starting more often than not, just because of his ability to win the initial draw. And so, you know, I think there's going to be very balanced time between the two units, but it would not shock me in the least if a unit built around Drouin, Dvorak, and Hoffman was the unit that got more of the starts on a power play than any unit that could be built around, say, Suzuki, Caulfield, and maybe Petrie or whatever. I mean, it's the face-off ability of Christian Dvorak on the power play is one of his most important aspects of his power play ability. And so, yeah. In that sense,
and it's some of Suzuki's biggest issues too.
Yes, so I mean, and I think it's also, you know, it's going to depend on what side, but they actually, I shouldn't say that, they have the ability to choose what side the faceoff is on, which also lends itself to them starting with Dvorak, because they could just be like, okay, we want in the left circle, Dvorak, go out there, win the draw, get a possession, and you know, if Hoffman's on that unit, then he risks seeing, depending on how that shift goes, you know, a minute and 20 seconds, the first minute and 20 seconds of a power play, you know, you never know. So I agree with you that, you know, I'm not saying that the signing was the smartest thing in the world, because he is a big time specialist, but I will say that a guy who scores power play goals, like, that's a pretty valuable specialist. Like, he's a guy that I think it's justifiable to sort of twist yourself in knots to try and fit him in the lineup and to pay him and to fit him in your payroll, because what he does on the power play is very rare and unique, and it's valuable for a team that struggled to score goals, especially on the power play, for as long as the Canadiens have.
Since Claude Julien took over the Canadiens, one of the main aspects of the Canadiens' identity has been a very strong team 5-on-5 that was struggling on the power play. And I feel as though this season we're going to see a big shift in that department, where the team won't be as effective 5-on-5 as it was in the past, but it's going to be a lot better on the power play. So it might compensate for the number of goals that they might score. If they make it to the playoffs, it'll have to be reassessed, because there's often less power plays during the playoffs. But in order to get there, I think that they can hope to be quite productive on the power play because of those two balance units. And also, I think it's one of the reasons why the Weidman experiment is also continuing, is because they need a second defenseman to quarterback that second unit. They're not going to put Petrie out there for two whole minutes. They'll need another guy. And the other two options that they have now are Romanov and Weidman.
They might put Petrie out there for two whole minutes. At some point, they're not going to start that way. I think Weidman's going to get a chance, but I think eventually we might see at some point Petrie taking full power plays.
It wouldn't
shock me.
If they do that, they better have four other Ds ready to step up on the PK. I'm okay with that. Keep him out there for 2 minutes, but take him off the PK then.
Well, I mean, when Edmondson comes back, they could do that. I mean, I think Romanov's going to get it. Not that he's going to get a shot. I think every time he's played, they've used him on the penalty kill. I think they feel really relatively comfortable with him on the penalty kill. It's more 5-on-5 where they seem he seems to struggle. I think he's able to focus his mind on the job on the penalty kill and really limits the situations where he puts himself in a position to make a bad decision. When Edmondson comes back, they could conceivably limit Petrie's time on the penalty kill, if not remove it, depending on how Romanov does. But I mean, that's, you know, with Savard, Sherratt, Edmondson, and Romanov, they could conceivably try and save Petrie that way. That's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, but then you can have somebody else than Weidman to play 5-on-5 and be in the lineup altogether.
Well, that's what would trigger that decision. Basically, if they realize that the benefit of having Weidman on the power play does not compensate for the deficiencies that he shows at 5-on-5, and maybe he won't show those deficiencies. Maybe he'll settle into a groove here. I mean, I think, you know, we shouldn't forget that he is coming back from the KHL. He has not been an NHL regular, well, basically ever, but he has not played a significant amount of games in the NHL in many years. You know, maybe once the regular season starts and he's given a defined role, maybe he is able to pull his weight at 5-on-5 and this doesn't become an issue and Petrie doesn't have to play all 2 minutes on the power play. But if neither Weidman nor Nikku nor Norlander nor someone else they might pick up on waivers in the next few days, if the Canes are unable to find someone who can both run the second power play unit and not be a liability at 5-on-5, which I think is the bar here. The bar is they just don't want someone that hurts them at 5-on-5. If they're unable to find that person, I think in a not so distant future, we might, you know, especially once Edmondson comes back, we might see Petrie just stay out there for the full 2 minutes. And I don't see why he couldn't do it. I mean, I agree with you that they would have to curtail his penalty killing time if they did that, but it is a viable option for them that I think they could use.
Because they have, he's their big kahuna, he's their guy back there. So they cannot start using him 30 minutes, at any point in the regular season. If they want to go there in the playoffs, well, be my guest. But in the regular season, they have to manage his ice time. And so whatever they ask more of him, they have to figure out a way to take off some of the load some other way. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, also in the context of their hope of balancing the use of their three defensive pairings, not necessarily equally, but in a more, in a fairer way than they did in the past. A balanced way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this has to be considered. And we know one thing's for sure, it's that Brett Kulak is not going to be on the power play.
No, so. Dominic Ducharme made that quite clear. And I really, you know what? This is what I like about Dominic Ducharme. He didn't beat around the bush, you know? And I think it's always puzzled me why the Canadians did not see Brett Kulak as a power play option. And Dominic Ducharme provided a very clear and concise answer to that question Wednesday. Let's hear it now.
Because I think the offense he brings is off a rush, off a broken play. He skates well. He can jump in. That's where he can bring some offense. But we don't see him as a quarterback on top on the power play.
So there you go. That's why Brett Kulak is not on the power play, explained quite nicely by Dominic Ducharme. And which is why, you know, I think his spot in the lineup is always going to be sort of at risk because he's not really a penalty killing option either. But he is a good 5-on-5 option. So that's another, he would be the beneficiary if they determine that they're better off using Jeff Petrie for the bulk of every power play, let's say, you know, if not 2 minutes, then a minute 40 or whatever. If they do that, that's a way for Brett Kulak to solidly be in the lineup. Because once you take the special teams element out of whatever role they want on that third pairing, Brett Kulak is by leaps and bounds ahead of all of his competition for a lineup spot, you know, on that third pair. And so that could be a way forward for him.
Even Caden Gooley. I'd like to hear you on Caden Gooley, because with Edmondson not being around to start the season, there is a chance that they might keep Gooley around. I don't know if it's just to hang around, be with the team, you know, soak in that experience or whatnot, play a couple of games. The intent seems to be clear that they want to send him down at some point and back to juniors. Dominique Ducharme was clear about that. But the possibility of Gooley starting the season in Montreal until Edmondson comes back is not crazy. So what do you think about that?
I don't think it's the end of the world. Listen, I think, you know, he along with the rest of his teammates had a tough night Tuesday in Toronto. The speed of the game obviously went up a notch, and he's not the only one that struggled with that, but he was definitely one of them. I wouldn't be opposed to giving him a few games in the NHL level, give him a taste, see how he does. You know, I think he has all the qualities of an NHL defenseman. You know, it's the one thing that jumps out at me watching him practice, watching him play. It's every time he's on the ice, he just screams NHL defenseman. And he will be a good to very good NHL defenseman for, I believe, for a long time. Like, he's going to have a long career in the NHL. Might not be a super, I don't think he will be a superstar. He might not be a star. He's probably not going to be a highly offensive guy. But he's going to be a solid top 4D in the NHL for a long time. And that, you know, that's not a dig. That's a compliment, you know? So it's clear at 19 years old that that's going to happen. I don't think there's many defensemen you can say that about, where you watch him play at 19 and say, well, that guy's going to have a long career as a top 4 guy. Well, I think with Gooley, it's quite obvious that he will. And so, listen, if they decide to do that, I think that's great. Give him a little taste of the NHL and then send him back to junior. And let him play out the season with Prince Albert and go to the World Juniors and do all those things and dominate at that level. That's fine. I think he's shown enough, even though he's had some difficult moments. I think he's shown enough to show that, you know, he could at least handle playing, you know, a somewhat limited role in NHL regular season games, and for him to get a taste of it, so that drives whatever improvements he makes on his game in junior. Then that's only a positive thing for him, I think. And so there's but if he gets sent back to junior without playing those games, that's positive too. Like, there's nothing bad that can come of Caden Gooley's training camp. I think he's been really, really impressive from the day one of rookie camp till right now.
Yeah, I agree. He's one of the winners of this camp, along with Raphaël Hervé-Pinard, even Michael Pezzetta, I think, has given a strong impression this time around. There are some guys that, you know, manage within they're each in their own style, each in their own limits, have managed to showcase themselves in interesting fashion. And, you know, the others, it's not necessarily the same. I think that the other end of the spectrum, Caden Primeau probably didn't have the type of training camp that he wanted. And now, as a result, he'll be Laval bound, and the Canadiens are going to stick with the newcomer Samuel Montembeau to start the season. So he had quite the baptism of fire with the Montreal Canadiens on Tuesday night.
No better way to get back into it. I mean, you know, getting, what was it, 33 shots in the first half of the game or whatever it was, 32. So,
yeah,
I thought he looked fine. But yeah, so we do have at least a better picture of what the Canadiens are going to look like to start the season. Saw it for the first time on Wednesday. We're going to see it Thursday night against Ottawa in the final preseason game. And then there's a long period of practice where I think some tweaking is going to happen, and Dominique Ducharme is going to finally sort of reveal what the final product will look like, and all the things that we just finished discussing, you know, how the defense pairs are going to look. I'm still not convinced the way they looked on Wednesday is how they will look a week from Wednesday in Toronto on opening night. And same thing with the forwards in terms of that fourth line. There are some questions that remain, but finally we do have some real clarity as to the look of this team. And we will be monitoring that going forward. We'll be back next week recording probably from Toronto in French, just ahead of the season opening game against the Maple Leafs for Le Sport Athletique. And just a reminder to all our listeners that if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, we are still running our preseason 50% off promotion for new subscribers who have not yet subscribed to The Athletic to give us a try for a year at 50% off our regular rate. You can get that sale by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. That's theathletic.com/athletic support, or basically by clicking on any Athletic story that you see pop up on social media or in your email or what have you, as long as you're viewing the story on mobile web or regular good old-fashioned computer web. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, as I mentioned, with Le Sport Athletique. Thank you, Marc-Antoine.
Well, thanks, Arpin, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.